Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Here come the two of them. Peter Reid and Kevin Ball, skipper and manager, arm in arm, arms aloft, take the salute. Peter Reid, the man who worked the miracle, and Kevin Ball, the captain in every sense. Peter Reid gets his medal, might as well be the Victoria Cross as far as what they think of him on Wearside. And there's the trophy. Kevin Ball gets it from Mike Alcock, managing director of Ensley, and the moment they've all been waiting for.
We're hoping that Peter Reid can join us. Peter's a bit of an enigma on Twitter, though, so I don't even know if he's awake. Like I said earlier, when he messaged me to say he would come on at 11 a.m, it was 2:35 in the morning. So, and he was at a do in Newcastle last night. So I don't think we would begrudge him a lie-in if that's what he's went for. But Reedy hopefully will be on over the coming minutes. If so, we'll bring him straight into the chat. We're just waiting for James Hunter to join. I've just spoken to James. He's ready to go.
Morning, chaps. How are we doing?
Hiya, James. How's it going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you guys?
All right, considering we've been awake for quite a while. Yeah, doing all right.
A bit bleary-eyed, probably a bit like me, because I stayed up till 3 o'clock watching the test, which was great.
I did as well. It was crap.
Hi, are you? How's
morning,
it going,
Pete. How are you doing?
How are you, chaps? Yeah, great to join you for the special effort that you're making with the soup kitchen. Fantastic.
As we stand, we haven't done a totaliser update for a while. We're on £40,895 raised by Sunderland fans and our friends. So we're doing
Well, listen, we need to get that up to 60 grand because that's what Everton paid Bolton Wanderers, and that's as much as I went for as a player. So if we can get to that 60 grand, it'll be great.
Well, if you've got any friends who might be feeling charitable this Christmas, Reedy, then please send them our way.
I'll get on to it. How's things, James? You okay?
I'm good, thanks, Pete. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I was up in Newcastle last night, and I was telling a lie before. I didn't see the test because it went down, but I listened on the radio. Devastated, nearly crashed the car 3 times.
Well, it was pretty much a car crash out there, to be honest, Pete.
Well, hopefully we could get it back, but more importantly, yes, doing a great effort, sterling effort. And it just shows you what football fans are like, and in particular the Sunderland ones. But it's more than Sunderland fans, isn't it? It's fans from all over the country, and especially the North East, which I'm up there a lot. They're special people, special fans.
What was your do-for last night, Pete?
I think it was grassroots football, and it was in Dunstan, Gaz's area. So I got a bit of stick, I got a bit of monkey's heat, which is, you know, not a problem. It was quite amusing, really. But there was a few red and whites there who were different class. Nah, it was a really good night, to be fair.
Rich, do you want to jump in, mate?
Yeah, thanks for jumping on, both of you. Really, we've just been talking to Alex Ray. I don't know how much of that you heard, if anything, but he was waxing lyrical about, you know, the impact that you and Sacco had on that team, especially the team that, you know, he came into in the Premier League, and then obviously getting you know, getting back up there at the second attempt. And it was just really your general kind of thoughts on that, because for us as fans, that's like, especially me and Ian and, yeah. and Gav, fans over 30, shall we say, that's like the heyday, as I think John Ficklin called it on one of our pods, like halcyon days. So, like, what are your, like, the things that stick out for you? What are your main kind of, like, when you think of that time, what are the highlights?
Well, first of all, I think Martin Smith's goal against Swindon got me the job permanently, I think.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you've always got to start somewhere. But then the players, when we first went up, I mean, I think I added Paul Bracewell, and I think I got Dave Kelly in, who got injured. But that was a remarkable achievement. And even more remarkable was the season after, when I brought Tony Colton in, and now Quinn, and both of them got injured early on, and we went down with 40 points, and I played a lot of young lads in there, and they gave me everything. And to go down with 40 points back then was sort of unheard of.
Yeah.
And then bouncing back, obviously, with the advent of the building of the Stadium of Light, it was always... You know, progress. Sad to leave Roker Park, because I remember playing there as a kid. 50,000 people one Easter when Sunderland got promotion. I think Tony Towers scored and Pop Robson. But, you know, going into the stadium, like, was exciting. And we built a really good team, a fantastic team. Funny enough, I think we're getting together in May. I think they're organising something for John Coote, the kit man at my time, who's left the club, but they're organising a testimonial. I think Alex Ray's coming down, and Kevin Phillips, all the lads. So that'll be good to get back, and I'm sure we'll reminisce, because every time I seen Mickey Bridges yesterday, I was at South Shields. And what a smashing club that they made that. I seen Mickey Bridges, who's obviously living in Australia. It was fantastic seeing him. It's though he's never left, like. So I'm looking forward to that. But special times for me, because the crowd was great. Hey, we had some downs, don't get me wrong, but you've got to have a downs to enjoy the ups. And it was absolutely magnificent time.
Yeah, it was a great time, Peter. When I came up to the North East, which was 1999, you were in charge of Sunderland then. I'd just been covering Bradford City before then, who got promoted with you in 99. And I'd, you know, been working with Paul Jewell, and he said, you know, go, you know, you'll love it in the North East. You'll love working with Reedy. Yeah. And you made me fantastically welcome up here. But I guess when I look back now, and I look back to my first two seasons covering Sunderland, you know, 99-2000 and 2000-2001, the two seventh place finishes, I didn't appreciate them enough. I thought this is what it's going to be like forever. You know, this is sort of the standard. And sadly, that, you know, that's turned out thus far to be the high point. You know, and I should have appreciated that more, I think.
If I've got regrets, not regrets, but you know, when you finish seventh. If you look at any league, the top four or the top six, you know, you've got to get international quality players in then, and I couldn't do it. I mean, when I was at Sunderland, it was great, but sometimes you used to have a look at Kevin Keegan, and he was buying Ginola, and he was buying him, and I'm not knocking the lads I bought, because they did great for me, but Brian Robson down the road, you know, I used to live in Yarm, and I used to see, like, the likes of Emerson and Ravinelli and in the restaurants down there, and I was thinking, bloody hell, they're not bad players, you know. So that's the only thing. I wish I could have, you know, had enough finance to go after the big boys, if you like, because, you know, the games against Manchester United and Chelsea's and the Liverpool's at the time were absolutely fantastic. But, you know, when you're playing against some of these sides and you look at the team sheet before you go, you thought, well, we've got it on today. But all in all, I thought our players at the time, my players at the time, did an absolutely fantastic job. And it was exciting times for the North East with the Borough doing well and Newcastle United, you know, getting all the quality players in. And Derby games were great. And it was just, I loved it, I've got to say.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you did get some top quality players in that first summer when you look at Stefan Schwartz that came in.
Spot on. And then
Thomas Elmer as well, everybody thought would be, you know, that kind of top quality player. Okay, it didn't work out with him, but, you know, they were two fantastic names to have brought to Sunderland, you know,
The only thing was that he done his Achilles, didn't he, Stefan?
Yeah.
In the Swedish game. But he was one of them. He was really underrated. When I lost Alan Johnson, I was having a panic up about, you know, where I could get it. But he just played that narrow left role absolutely brilliant for me. I like it. And then we had to adapt because when we were bombing, we had Alan Johnson and some of the people for reasons. I mean, Alan Johnson wanted to leave and Buzzer went. So I had to adapt. I got Hutch narrow right one side. He got me 10 or 12 goals in the season. So all in all, there were some really good players who were at the football club.
And obviously we heard from Julio Arca.
Brilliant player. Well.
So I wanted to give our other colleagues from Rote Report a chance to ask a question. So I'm going to first come to Bomber because he chipped in first in our chat and then give the other lads a chance to have their question to Peter Reid.
Really, it's not so much a question, mate, but I just wanted to let you know something. So, I'm born and bred in Gloucestershire. I've got no ties to the North East, no ties to Sunderland whatsoever. But between you and Super Kev in that 98-99 season, that 105-point season, that was the season that made me a Sunderland fan. And I've got, like I said, I've got no ties to the North East whatsoever. I wasn't brought up a Sunderland fan or family from up there. But just the way that you got that team playing and how good we were in that one season, you know, between Quinny and Kev and the way you had them set up, that basically you're the reason I'm a Sunderland fan, mate, between you and Super Kev. I don't have a question. I just wanted to gush a little bit.
To be fair to you, you know, after the playoff defeat on Pens,
yeah,
I tell you what, the players deserve an awful lot of credit, you know. I mean, I'm managing the setup, but I was devastated, you know. I had to go away for I went in the Lake District and got legless for about 4 days. I couldn't handle it. I'd gone. but you know what? I think they had a meeting between themselves, and not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, that pre-season when I got out there and I was... Them players were absolutely brilliant. I've got to say, all credit to them. You know, they're the ones who stood up and, you know, the harsh disappointment of losing 7-6 on Pens with that useless Mickey Gray's penalty. You can't catch your breath.
I remember hearing something. It was an interview with Quinny who said exactly the same thing. He said after that penalty defeat, they kind of had a players' meeting and kind of all just agreed that they'd never feel that again and that they were going to put it right this season. And you know, bloody hell, did you do that?
Yeah, hey, listen, they were absolutely magnificent. They were a joy to train, to manage, to coach. And, you know, all credit to them. I've got to say that.
Ant, do you have a question you want to come in with?
Yeah. Apologies if your voice goes a little bit, Peter. I'm slightly emotional here. So, literally, as you just said there, mate, obviously, you're on about looking at the Newcastle at the time, they had the Ginolas, and you look at the Man Uniteds, the Chelseas. You know what, mate? We were competing with them. Without the riches or anything like that, you know, yeah, we spent money here and there and stuff like that, but a credit to you and a credit to the side as well as how we managed to finish seventh and seventh in a row in that day and age, mate. Just absolutely mental. But, how good were that group with you then? You know what I mean?
Well, I've done a work with Roy Keane on the TV and Sir Alex Ferguson's a pal of mine. And you know, when you talk about times, them two said, and these two can't get bigger names in football, said, every time we played your Sunderland side, we knew we had a game on. Now, that to me says it all. I thought, wow, that's a different class that. And I think that reiterates what you said, you know, and to come from two such esteemed people in football. It's fantastic.
Peter, it's Gav, yeah. I just want to ask you something because people who've been listening to this probably think I'm a bit obsessed with Bobby Saxton, but I am. I just want to ask you, sort of, how much does he mean to you? Because he means so much to the fans. He means so much to all of the players who played as part of that team. But he was your right-hand man. What does he mean to you even now?
He was, I worked with him when I was at Man City, but he was on the scouting side of it, and he recommended some really good players. He recommended Andy Cole when he was at Bristol City, and I couldn't get him. So his quality, but socially, you know, and in football discussions, we didn't always agree, but I loved somebody like that who was strong and give the point of view, and I always liked people like that. And we had many discussions. I mean, I can remember him, you know, giving me pearls of wisdom about tactics, and then I can remember me and him arguing. He'd be saying, Kev Phillips is doing nothing. I think it was Everton, I remember the game, Kev, oh, we've got to leave our goal scorer on. And then Phillips hit one in the top corner, he'd go, oh. He sat down, he went, Sacco, shut up. So, but he was a great coach in terms of getting messages over in a basic manner where everybody knew. Sometimes people complicate football. You know, the modern game's great, don't get me wrong. You know, recycling the ball, winning a tackle, isn't it? You know, and tackle, you know, transition, it's a counter-attack. You know, between the lines is getting in space and forward passes. So nothing changes. And Sacco was spot on. Every time we had a discussion about how we're going to play, when we were on the training pitch, he implemented it as good as anyone. And besides being a brilliant football man, he's a brilliant person. I was up there about 6 weeks ago. We were in the Manos and we had a great night. You know, and I always love seeing him. And he's a person I love to death.
He's great, Sacco, you know, a fantastic character to have around that training ground. I can remember, you know, down at the Charlie Hurley Centre, you used to go into the porter cabin offices there, Peter, remember?
Yeah.
And Sacco would be sat in the canteen and you'd be talking football with him, and he'd have the salt and pepper pots out, and this would be moving and that would be moving, and then he'd be telling you how are you going to have to defend the corner, and he'd have you out of your seat, and he'd be shoulder barging you and saying, this is what, you know. And it was just great to have that sort of insight from him. And he was just a wonderful character in that, you know, he didn't care anything for what people thought. He used to wander around that training ground. I can picture him now in like shorts, flip-flops and carrying a briefcase. You know, just a fantastic character. In fact, you know, all that backroom team at that stage were similar, weren't they? You had Sacco and people like Mickey Holland and, you know, other people. It was just a real sort of good atmosphere, wasn't it, around the training ground at that time?
Yeah, well, Clarke, he got Mickey Holland in. He says, I've got a lad he's got all of the certificates, he's been everywhere. So he brought these certificates in. Oh, they were so bent, it was untrue. You know, he got them offered a photocopier. It was a joke. But I liked Mickey's character, and I said, well, come in, have a go. And I said, and by the way, you're a black and white, aren't you? And he rolled his sleeve up and he had the badge, and I said, come in. But he was brilliant in there, absolutely brilliant. And it was great. I think he's at West Brom now, so he stayed in football. The dressing room, I mean, and this is, again, praise for the players. The dressing room was a great dressing room. And when you got players who policed their own dressing room, hey, sometimes they had to go in and sort one or two out, which you get that, don't you? I quite like that as well, because I quite like characters, you know, and you just had Alex Ray on who had a couple of bad situations, but I tell you what a player he was and what a man he is, you know. So, yeah, you know, one of the biggest disappointments was Steve Bowe getting injured as well, you know. That was the big one, because I'll tell you what you know, when you get someone in and he organises things at the back and you think, wow, what a player. I mean, and I know he was 34 when I got him, but you just think, wow, what a player you are. And he was another character in that dressing room, even though we only had 6 months out of him. I was unlucky with a couple of them, like Stefan Schwartz and him, who were influential, and obviously Tony Coton at the time, and Wayne Quinney done his ball. The other lads, you know, the likes of Mickey Bridges who come in, what a job he did. You know, some of the players who come in, Darren Williams, Darren Holloway, some of these young lads who come in and did. I mean, I remember saying to, we played Chelsea, and I remember saying to him, like, Zola doesn't get a kick. And he was brilliant. And then I think I sent him on against Man United, get close to Keane, and I think Keane ended up getting sent off. Not that I wanted him sent off, but he did. And then, like, beating Chelsea, beating 20 minutes four up, and Eric Ware and Paul Farewell were sent to midfield players. And I'm the Friday night, I was in Yarm 85 drinking glasses of wine because I was having a right panic up about the game. And the lads just come out, and they were absolutely brilliant. So there's a lot of, you know, unsung heroes in them years where I was manager of that great club.
So people don't realise as well, you know, people, you know, we know a lot more about football around the world now and around Europe than we did probably, you know, 20 odd years ago. And you brought in players like, you know, Stan Varga, who came from nowhere and had that unbelievable debut against Arsenal, had Thierry Henry in his top pocket, and you know, and then he got injured, of course, and that's another one, you know, that was a problem. But, you know, and then obviously Julio, that you've already spoken about, someone else who came, you know, that I'm guessing Sunderland fans had never heard of when he arrived, but had a fantastic, you know, 6 years at Sunderland. You know, some of these players that you were able to bring in were, you know, just fantastic to have at the football club, and great characters too.
Yeah, I think in recruitment, I mean, hey, listen, I made mistakes in recruitment. Don't get me wrong, I'm not the messiah, but you tell me a manager who isn't. What you've got to do is make more good buys predominantly than bad buys, and I think I did that. You know, I made a couple of horrific mistakes, which you always do. I mean, as a player, I think I miss it one pass all in my career. So even I made mistakes as a player. But now, as a manager, you've got to get more right than you get wrong. And I think I did that. And like you say, you know, when you go through the air and some of the players we had in there, it was terrific.
Pete, I was just going to ask you about specifically about doing things right. When we sat in 2000-2001 season, we were sat in the top four for God knows how many weeks. And I was just wondering what the atmosphere was like in the squad at that time.
The lads were bombing. I mean, hey, listen, we got a couple of things that went against us. But the atmosphere around the place, you know, and like I said before, I always thought anyone who come to the stadium lights or was playing Sunderland at that time knew they had a game on. And the players were playing with great confidence. And it was a joy to be there, and it was a joy to work with them, to be fairly honest. The atmosphere was terrific. And listen, hey, I knew they used to socialise in Durham, because I'm not stupid. As a player, I used to socialise. But as long as they come in and work the socks off, I was going to say work something else off there, but people will listen. But work the socks off, and, you know, work in training and do it on a match day. What can you do? You've got to let them have it. Nowadays, it's different. It's different, you know, the lads with sports science, I think the social would be curtailed somewhat nowadays. But back then, as long as they went out there and did the business, you know, and we were never lacking in fitness, you know, we always got there. And sometimes even professional footballers need a release. And sometimes when they want to have a pint, go and have a pint.
Reedy, at what point did you think it kind of started going wrong? Because as a fan, those seven place finishes, and, you know, we were flying at that point. I didn't see it ever ending, and I was thinking that, you know, as a Sunderland fan, God, this is brilliant. I was like two or three, 4 years into my kind of stint as a Sunderland fan, thinking this was brilliant, it's never going to end. And obviously, that's probably the crowning achievements for my space as a Sunderland fan. Were you aware that things were going a bit Orion? Or do you know what it was?
I think it's a culmination of things. When I was always trying to look for someone, you know, Quinny was getting, I mean, Quinny did brilliant for us, but he was just getting a little bit, and I lost Mickey Bridges, so I wanted to keep Mickey, but obviously Leeds and Tottenham were in, I couldn't get hold of him, you know, contracts end, and the lad wouldn't sign a new deal. So little things like that, because when I had Dickie O'Bridgey, Kev Phillips, and Quinny, I had four up there, four strikers. It was great, and I think that was the main one, the goal scores. Because when we were seventh and seventh, and then fourth from bottom, I think we only scored 27 goals, and Kev had an injury, so I think that was it, trying to get that striker in, or, you know, the top quality one. How do you replace him now, Quinn? How do you replace him, Mickey Bridges?
Well, you don't, do you? You don't.
It's hard work. It's hard work. And I couldn't do it at the end of Tory Andrew Flo. I mean, I only had three or four games with him. So I think it was a cool, you know, where we were bombing, and I had, because don't forget Kevin Phillips, when we went up, Kevin Phillips was injured for a bit. He done his metatarsal against Chester, wasn't going to play him, and he begged me to play, and I was going to drag him off, and he done it, and he was out for it done me head in. So, but I had people who went in there and did jobs for me, who were good players, and once I couldn't replace them, I was always looking for that, you know, that front man. Because listen, I got Sorensen in the Nets, and I always think that the two most important, well, Bill Shankly used to say, go right through the middle, didn't he? You know, when you're building a team. So I always loved to go a great goalkeeper, because when I was at Everton, Neville Southall won us more games than anything. And I always remember Cluffy saying, the goalie, you know, bought Peter Shilton, and a front man who can get you the goal or make you the goal. They're the most important things. So that's what I was always trying to get. And because I couldn't do that, I always thought we were under pressure then, because when we were on top in games, I had people who could stick it in the net. Once I lost that, it was hard.
Hi, Rudy. It's Ian. I've got a quick question. It's probably two more than one. Is there a bit of it you really miss? Like, if someone said, oh, come back and manage this club, there'd be a bit of it you think, yeah, I really want to do that again. And what, you know, what advice would you give to, like, Lee Johnson about what he should make the most of in his time kind of at the club now?
Mm. Well, I never think you go back. I always go back, and the look after me brilliant. So, you know, I think my ship sailed in terms of being involved with something. Lee Johnson's an experienced coach, and like, listen, the First Division's a tough league. I think what you got to do, and he'll know, in games when you don't play well, try and keep clean sheets, because you don't get beat. And when you're playing well, invariably you win games. But you know, when I used to love it when we dug one out, me, you know, and we haven't been great, because that tells you something. That tells you, hey, we're hard to beat us. You know, we're hard to beat. I remember we beat Berry. You know, when you play Berry at the Stadium, like, we beat them 2-0. Stanton Ed had a good side, but it was an ugly game, and we beat them 2-0. And you know, after that game, I was made up because it was ugly. We hadn't played well. We got a clean sheet, and we got a couple of goals. And that, I think, you know, when you got a good side, you dig results out when you don't play well. When you play well, if you got a good side, invariably you win. So that's the biggest thing I'd say. Just be hard to beat.
I was just looking at that 2001-2002 league table, actually, really, just to after what you were saying. And even though we finished fourth bottom, you're right, our goals were 29 goals, but we were still eighth or ninth best defence in the league. You know, we were a mid-table team defensively.
That's, you know, when you're the manager and you know that, I'm thinking, we're all right at the back, but in the two previous seasons, we got goals. When we couldn't stick it in, I knew it was going to be really tough. But
yeah,
fair to the lads, you know, even that, they dug it out. Like 20, I thought it was 27, so I'm doing the lads a disservice.
Yeah.
29 goals from, you know you need to be tight at the back. So you've always got to have, in my opinion, you've always got to have that platform, you know, that solid base to get things going. You look at the good sides. I mean, Man City, you've got flares, but they don't concede. Whatever you say, they don't concede. Chelsea, Liverpool, these teams are strong at the back. Gives them the platform to go and play.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, looking at that, like, we conceded one less goal than Newcastle that year and they finished fourth. So,
yeah,
says something, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder who they had up front.
There was a guy, I can't remember what he's called.
Yeah, no, yeah. He won bad. Yeah. I'm just glad he wasn't great on penalties on one special occasion.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to get that in, couldn't I? Oh, dear me, Peter.
Absolutely.
Really, have a bit of class about you, lad.
To be fair, really, I was just about to mention the Derby games. I mean, like, the first Derby game I saw us win was the first 2-1 at the... Yeah. At St. James's Park, I mean, it was biblical, wasn't it? The weather was bad and, you know, they took the lead and the fight back. I mean, the second half were absolutely amazing. But to go there twice in 2 years and win 2-1, I mean, two were probably one of the best games we've ever had, really, just how end-to-end it was. I mean, to beat them twice in 2 years must have been epic, wasn't it?
I think, do you know what? I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, we got the results in them, but I thought they were great football matches. I thought you were really exciting end to end. And like, you know when you're on the side and you're concentrating, but I can remember vividly them two games flashing by. I thought, wow, it's half time. Wow, it's full time. Mind you, no, when it was full time, we weren't hanging on, but 2-1. You just want that after to blow the whistle, don't you? But I just thought they were really good football matches, two good football sides. And some of the stuff that was played on when the rain comes down, I thought the players on both sides were exceptional.
Yeah, was your heart in your mouth when Bawley tried to take somebody out and hit the bar from 45 yards out?
It's the only time I wanted Bawley to duck out of a tackle. you try and get Kevin Ball to duck out of a tackle, you have got no chance. And that was why he was such an influential player in there.
And that's the thing, but Peter, you know, you look at that game and that incident, I mean, it gets further and further out by the time, you know, by the time that the story's been told again, he was virtually in the Newcastle penalty area. But, you know, the number of times you used to watch the players do the crossbar challenge down at the Charlie Hurley Centre, you know, and and finally, Bawley got one right in that game.
It was like... It was like time stood still when I'm watching the ball, you know. I think there was 50,000 and everybody went quiet. It was surreal, and it just clipped the bar. And I thought, Jesus, tonight that'll do me. I'll take your mouth stuff, but great memories.
It was just everybody's laptops, telephones that we used to use in those days. Everything just stopped working in the press box. There was no roof on that stand. Everybody was drenched. I remember, I don't know if you remember Carl Liddell from The Sun. Carl had a Larry expensive suit on, and I think the sleeves finished up halfway up his arms. You know, by the time it dried out, it was, you know, ridiculous.
If I'm not mistaken, I think it was dashing down with rain that much. I think Bob Murray ended up in a Sunderland kit in the director's box, you know. So that tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think Bob took great pleasure in that. It was terrible. Look at the gear; it's ruined. Can anybody get me a coat and a shirt?
I remember that. Yeah, some of the things, but great times.
Yeah, we've been joined by Jonathan Wilson. Jonathan, how are you doing, mate?
I'm very well, thanks. Very much enjoying the chat.
Have you got a question for Peter? Is there anything you would like to ask him about those days? I know when we were chatting during the week, you were saying you're not really up on current day Sunderland stuff, but I imagine that era under Reedy was probably one of the best times you had as a Sunderland fan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was right at my start as a journalist. So, I mean, I was at a couple of press conferences. But I mean, just talking about that derby in the rain, I was at the Beanback at and, you know, that was just incredible, kind of, yeah. And the Phillips chip, yeah. I mean, just what a night that was. What memories they are.
Pete, yeah. So those derby games. I mean, the ones that we always talk about are the two at St James's back to back. But I always enjoyed the game where we were getting beat 2-0 and we came back to draw. What was that like? What was your team talk like at 2-0 down, Peter?
I think was Sir Bobby in God rest his soul. Was Sir Bobby in charge in that game?
I think he was.
I think he was. I just loved it. I mean, the crowd got us going, and we showed great resilience. But it was listen, I think we were 2-2. I don't think we played bad. They were a side, Newcastle United, who always had a goal in them. Yeah, for obvious reasons. We've just been on about them, Alan Shearer. For obvious reasons. You know, even when Newcastle United weren't playing well, Alan Shearer would always likely pop up with a goal because he's one of the greatest goal scorers in history. So you knew that. But to show resilience to fight back, I thought was tremendous. And again, another brilliant, brilliant football match. You've got to say, it was absolutely outstanding. The quality of the football.
But we were talking to Alex Ray earlier, and he's a player of a certain sort of set of characteristics, I think it's fair to say. Yeah. Alex, he said himself, he loved getting involved, winding people up and getting stuck into them. But that was a common sort of characteristic of that squad, wasn't it? We had a lot of big characters who could turn it on when we need them to. And it's sort of something that's been missing over the last few years with Sunderland, where we haven't had enough of those types of characters. Is that something you look for specifically in your squad?
Well, I think Alex is doing himself a bit of a disservice because he was feisty, but I'll tell you what, he couldn't half control and pass the ball. You know, he the little ones round the corner, them little sliders down the sides. Besides being feisty, I was quite feisty on the park, but you know, he could play as well. That's the big thing. But that desire, like I say before, that desire not to get beat in games is a big thing for me. You know, because when you're playing against players who are as good as you, and you get that sometimes, if you've got that edge, that desire, it gets you through. Alex Ray has it. You know, all the top players have it. And that's what you look for. You look for ability, you look for technical ability, without a doubt. But I tell you what, when you get that desire as well, it doesn't half help.
Yeah, absolutely. But like you say, I mean, probably just because that's one thing I think I've heard Bawley talk in the past about, he feels he was given a disservice when he was a hard man. Mm. I think there were a lot of good footballers in that team, wasn't there? The likes of Summerby and Johnson. Yeah. Who were so good at delivering key, crucial passes to the forwards.
Well, we had a nice balance. I mean, Buzzer just got clever, out his feet, half a yard. And Quinn and Phillips had known who's coming in. Alan Johnson was a clever footballer, used to come on that right foot, he could jink. He wasn't the quickest, but he was really intelligent. And then when he did that, I had Mickey Gray coming on the overlap. You know, we went narrow. So it was a good balance to the side. And, you know, if you look at the modern game now, fullbacks are massive in attacking sense. I think if you look at us back then, we had that with our fullbacks. Macon used to get forward with some, and Mickey Gray used to get in there. So we had a nice balance to the team, which doesn't half help.
Yeah, I see that we have one of your former players joining us now, Matt Piper. Hiya, Matt.
How you doing?
How you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you. Good to join. I'm listening to the Gaffer's stories and I'm thinking, oh, brilliant.
How are you, Matt? You okay?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good, thanks, Gaffer.
When you talk about lads who get injured and you don't have much time, I think Matt comes into that category as well. I always remember when he played against us at Leicester, I thought, wow, who's this? You know, and I managed to get him. And unfortunately for for Matt. He sustained a bad injury as well.
Matt, what are your sort of memories of when you first arrived at Runnin' Bet, really?
Only good things, really. Honestly, I mean, obviously, as the gaffer just said, you know, getting injured so soon into my time at Sunderland, I think I was there, I mean, 13 games in. I started, did start really well. And, you know, I only had a short career, but I always say the gaffer's probably my favourite one. I'm not just saying that because I'm on here now and he's on. I had 14 managers in my short career. And some really good ones.
You didn't get 13 of them with the sack, did you?
Hey, you know what? I probably did get
far. I love it.
I mean, I had some good ones. Mick McCarthy's one of my favourites as well. But
terrific.
The gaffer, honestly, he was so... He brought me to the club, number one. Great club. I played for two really special clubs in my time at Leicester and Sunderland. But, yeah, out of all the managers, I think what I always fondly remember is how he was with me as a one-on-one. He talks about all the characters there that he had in the dressing room. I was quite quiet back at that point. But he really, you know, really gave me belief when I first got there. I remember he said to me, you won't remember this, but he said to me, when the sort of press came on and we just got beat by the Newcastle, Sheeran Bellamy scored.
But
we did play all right in that game.
As he
said, you know, when you're up against the likes of Newcastle at that point with Shearer, Bellamy, Gary Speed, God bless him, Nobby Solano, they had such a brilliant team. But we did play quite well when we lost, but the gaffer brought me in the office afterwards and the pressure was ramped up on him, of course it was. But he said, listen, your performances are keeping me in a job at the minute. And then I got in the 21s, I went away with them, and then I got injured.
Yeah.
And while I was away, I think we can all look back now and realise the club made a disastrous decision in sacking the gaffer and bringing in Howard. I know the gaffer probably won't say that, but...
To be fair, but when Bob Murray sacked me, I recommended Mick McCarthy, but he went for Howard Wilkinson, so... He didn't take any notice.
That went well.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not knocking Howard Wilkinson because he's been a great coach and he won the league championship with I think it was the last one before the Premiership, if I'm not mistaken.
It was.
Because I remember we beat him at Main Road, but they had a good Strachan, Speedo, McAllister, Batty, good team.
Brian Dean.
Yeah, good team it was, to be fair.
Yeah. I think the thing with Howard was, you know, I mean, I liked Howard as a person, and I'd worked with him in the mid 90s when he was at Leeds, and I worked for a newspaper in Leeds. I used to cover Bradford, but I did a couple of Leeds games too. In actual fact, I did the two games. I don't know if you remember. Well, you will remember them. But when Alex Ferguson was playing mind games with Kevin Keegan. Leeds were at Man United, and that was when Alex Ferguson planted the seed about players trying. And then the next game, when Newcastle were at Leeds and Kevin Keegan had his rant in the tunnel. Well, I did those two games. And so I remembered Howard from that. But I think Howard was such a culture shock from what had gone before with you, Peter. And the players didn't take to him. The results didn't come. And his personality didn't get anywhere with the Sunderland fans. So, you know, he was a great coach. As you say, he was the last English manager to win the top flight title. He just didn't work out for him here. You know, it was a disaster.
Yeah. I remember playing against Notts County when I was a babby at Bolton Wanderers. And they were really well. Jimmy Cyril was a manager, but they were really well coached. And it was a young Howard Wilkinson who was the coach there. So, you know, they played some good stuff, passing out from the back. And, you know, I always remember him on the side vividly when I was a kid. So, yeah, he did. Hey, listen, sometimes it doesn't work out for the clubs.
Yeah. No, we've definitely seen that, haven't we? That managers who can be very successful elsewhere don't always necessarily fit with Sunderland or maybe where the squad is at this time. Peter, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about, obviously you've been working with Ipswich, and I guess did you move on when
Kuki? Yeah. Moved? I mean, he got me in as a consultant, and when he goes, I'm one of them old school people who, you know, I mean, it's a smashing football club, and did he get enough time? No. Did he get a lot of new players in? It needed to bed in. Did he have time? Not in my opinion, but the people that be there made the decision. So that's it. But it is a very, very good football club. You know, when you go down there and you see the Sir Bobby Robson stand, the Alf Ramsey stand, and you see, I mean, I played against some of the, you know, the Muirs, the Tysons, the Butchers, the Rosmans, the Walks, the Mariners. Wow, what a history that club's got.
Absolutely, it does, doesn't it? And obviously they're down in League One with us. We've got Sheffield Wednesday down there. We've got, you know, some...
Oh, it's a good league. I mean, big names. Wigan play Ipswich, and Wigan have got some good players in there as well. And while we're talking about that, I'd like to... send all my best wishes to Charlie White. Obviously, we all know what happened on the training pitch, and that's brilliant news that he's made a full recovery. But that must have been so traumatic for everyone at Wigan Athletic. Fantastic that Charlie's up and about. Yeah. Brilliant.
It is, and it sounds like they'd had CPR training as well on the back of some of the other things that have happened, like Christian Eriksen, Fabrice Muamba, you know. So it's something that obviously we lost Mark Vivian Foye on the pitch, and it's something that obviously is a risk for young men. So all the best to Charlie, and thanks for bringing that up, Peter.
No problem.
It's the players who make the game in the end, isn't it? And Charlie did a hell of a job for us. So that's great. But so what when you were there as a consultant, what did you make of League One as a standard? Because for me, it's gone up in terms of like the quality of play and just the way the game's played there.
There's different styles. I think I've got to say, I thought Rotherham were powerful. Everybody knew the job, plenty of energy, and I think they'll go close to going up. Really good. Down at Wickham are a hard team to play against, and then you've got the Ulysses. I mean, I was at the Sunderland game, and I thought Ipswich had good chances. Couldn't stick back, but on about it, stick them away, and then obviously the corner, and dug a result out, clean sheet, and dug a result out, which I was going on about before as well. But when you look at some of the teams, the Charltons, the Sheffield Wednesdays, the Sunderland Football Club, Ipswich in that league, and I mentioned Rotherham, who've been up and down, you know, it's a great league, Wigan Athletic. It's a great league, and it's not hard to get out of these leagues. And sometimes, I know Sunderland fans get a bit anxious in games when they think they should be winning, and I understand the frustrations, but... You know, every little bit helps. If you get behind your team, that could be the little difference between a victory or a draw and a defeat, because it is a tough league. I mean, I think Sunderland should be in the Premier League, but you've got to get out of this league and earn the right, and every bit, little bit of support helps.
You just mentioned the crowd there, Peter. Sorry to jump in. First of all, thank you for so many incredible memories, I mean, personally and for everyone else. But the atmosphere when you were manager at the club was something that I don't think's ever really been replicated since. Was there just an X factor there in the way everything come together, or was that something that is like an untapped kind of potential within the fan base at the moment?
No, I went on about that game. I played in an Easter at Old Roker Park. Even back then, and people are talked to about playing games in big games at Sunderland when Roker was, you know, I played there when it was 50,000 on an Easter. I thought, Christ almighty, where am I here? It was amazing. So it's always had that. it's always had that staunch, passionate support, which is, you know, why why it's such a brilliant football club. You know, because, I mean, you'll have different owners in football clubs, and we're going on it, but the supporters are the ones who keep it going and are with them all the time. Owners will come and go. Supporters are always there. And Sunderland have always had... I mean, if you look back in the 50s and you look back in the history books, you know, early 1900s when they were... It's a fantastic history. So is it inbred in them? Yeah, I think it is. Passionate. And when I was there and we played teams at the Stadium of Light... The fans were a massive, massive influence on us, without a doubt. Massive influence. That year, when we got beat first game of the season and we got battered by
Chelsea.
I think Gus Poyet got the old scissor kick. I think Zola chipped one over the top. I went quite open in that game, but the corresponding game in December, wow. The crowd were up for that. And for the first 20 minutes, as we say, we were on fire. The crowd got us going, without a doubt. I mean, the players were brilliant, but the crowd were right into the faces. And the noise that I can remember Desailly, what a great player he was. I can remember him looking around as though, what's going on here? You know, the noise from the supporters was unbelievable.
Rich, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah. We'll keep for as long as we can, Peter, and thanks, James, as well.
Hurry up, I'm starving. I haven't had your
breakfast. Well, feel free to leave when you like.
Maya's still here. He's on the phone. Maya Piper's still here. He's on the phone to Peter Taylor, telling him he didn't mean it.
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just loving all the stories, really. Listen, I've got to go as well, but listen, let me tell you this. It was an honour to play for Sunderland Football Club. I know I didn't play many games, but to pull that shirt on, to play for that club and to play for a manager like the Gaffer was...
Matt, we all know how unlucky you were, pal. Don't worry about that.
Top man, Gaffer. Hey, great what you're all doing. Keep it going. I'm just going to nip off now and go and donate as well.
All take the best. Care, cheers, man. Matt.
Thanks. See you, Matt.
Take care. Cheers. Bye.
Lovely to hear from
top man. Yeah, very unfortunate young man. Very unfortunate.
It was such a talent as well. I mean, so excited. And like you said, he was away with the under-21s, wasn't he? And just kept picking up those injuries. But I don't know if Bomber or James or Tom wants to come back and ask you one final question, Peter.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, mine's not overly interesting, Peter, but obviously you've had quite a colourful history sort of after you left Sunderland, you've coached all over the world, you've had various roles. Would you rank Sunderland as the best time you've had in your career, or is there a moment in your career where it's just completely overshadowed everything you've achieved in your, well, a fairly long and successful career?
I think first and foremost, playing's the best. Playing, you know, I'd give anything to be like 40 years younger and, you know, get my boots on and get out in the park. But, you know, when you go into management, it's second best. But the thrills you get, the ups and downs, you know, disappointments and the joy of success, it's you can't describe it. It's fantastic. I'm just lucky. I was born in Liverpool, grew up in Knighton, you know, as a decent football career. But, you know, when you're a young boy and you dream of winning things, I won the FA Cup. Wow. If you'd have said that to me when I was like 10, I'd have gone, you're crackers. So, and I know some people, and it has been devalued to an extent, but that was the first major trophy I won. And that is still, like, I still giggle about it being a young boy having that dream and fulfilling that dream. So, you know, everything, I've been dead lucky. I mean, I had a few injuries, got over them, but to be able to play football at the highest level, a manager at the highest level, for a young schoolboy from Eton, that'll do for me.
And you're really? on you were on the pitch as well there to see one of the greatest goals of all time.
I knew that had come up. That's why I was trying to get off.
Couldn't get it. I was trying to get it off.
he won bad, to be fair. I mean, yeah. I was lucky enough to play against some great players, and God rest his soul, Diego Maradona was one of them. And I was dead lucky, you know. I played against the likes of Bobby Moore, Alan Mullery, Alan Ball, Billy Bremner at the end of their careers. But, you know, for a young player to play against that, George Best when he was at Fulham, I mean, I look back and I think, Christ, you played against them. And that was a good era. I mean, they were a little bit older. I played in the same side as Frank Worthington, Matt Bolton, Peter Thompson, Tony Dunn, Willie Morgan, you know, and then, you know, won a couple of championships with Everton. Wow. I get goose pimples thinking about it.
Yeah. It's amazing. And that, you know, young players learn from older players, and it yeah. passes on down the generations, doesn't it? I mean, you talked about Paul Gracewell earlier. I know he was big influence on a lot of the players. In, you know, you played with him, and then he was in your team, and he's passed on things that have cascaded on down the generations. So, you know, that's the thing with football, isn't it? It never stops, even with pandemics and whatever. It never stops, and we keep going. A bit like this Twitter space, really.
Long may it continue. And by the way, I've got to say, you've done fantastic. Any help I could give you, give us a shout. Good to speak to James as well.
Yeah.
Top man.
Thank you.
I'm going to shoot because the beam's on toast. Is getting ready.
That sounds good.
So, HB sauce on. So, have a good day. Nice. And keep it going. Keep donating.
Yeah. Well, all the best. See you, Peter.
Thank you.
Ta-ra, lads.
Cheers, Reedy.
Cheers.
What a guy. What a guy. What a legend.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.